Okay, we're going to talk about creating possibilities for service design innovation. This quick lecture is about how do you analyze an activity and go from analyzing to creating new possibilities with the goal of developing a new service. And this service should be innovative in order to change the original activity that served as inspiration for the service. So what is service design? It's an emerging practice of designing networks of people, places, and technologies. In the past, design was very much concerned about materials, and then we got the complex entity object, and currently we live in the world of the emergent performances. And I mentioned experience design, interaction design, and service design as examples of practices that do not focus on hard-bound objects, that really focuses on relationships between people. And sometimes there are objects in that, but it's not the goal to design those objects. You more like the goal to design the relationships between people. And this is like a performance. Since it's about people, every aspect of a service can be designed. There are limits of what you can design and what you may not design because it doesn't work. It's very difficult to design people's behavior, although some governments have tried that in the past. It's through social engineering. It didn't work very well, I would say. People are very resilient and they resist any kind of attempt to control their behavior. They might behave differently under the hoods, and they do not see what's going on.
Can you give an example of what governments try to?
Yeah, for example, I think the communist, socialist governments, they were probably the biggest experiment in social control. They tried to instill people to think they live in a community, they are good to each other, they have solidarity bonds. But then people would work for society because they like society, but it didn't work because people did not care so much about society. Although they had all these heroes, festivals, advertising, talking about how great their countries were, nationalism would never really inspire everybody to work hard for the country. Capitalism had been much better in stimulating people to work hard. And mainly because capitalism has this freedom of, principle, right? So you're free. You don't need to do whatever you don't need to do anything that we tell you to do. You just need to get money, and there are multiple ways to get money. So capitalism shapes people's behavior for sure, but there are a range of degrees of possibilities for them to explore, and that's different from design. I would say design is really telling what people should do. You can do this with some small things, but not with whole situations. So service design, one way to overcome this contradiction that things can be designed and things cannot be designed, is that you include the people that actually will use or deliver the service in the design process. So instead of designing for them, you design with them, and then they design themselves the way they want to work, and that's different, a different way of designing. The goal is to create new possibilities for other activities. Service design really looks at what are the activities that a company, organization, the users have, and then how do you create new possibilities for interacting, for innovating in those activities. This is how it looks like in the pictures. This is servicedesignsprinter.com, a website derived from that book that I brought many times, Service Design, what's the name? Service Startups, Service Startup. It's really a cool book and also cool implementation of the concept. They say services should be co-designed with stakeholders and with users, and they use a lot of post-its like we use in this class. So design thinking currently, one of the heavy users, good morning, are the services designers, people who work with this purpose of designing services. You've seen the pictures, people playing out theater, people drawing together, people making diagrams, and of course a lot of post-its. The basic tenet of service design is that service design is infrastructure. Infrastructure for companies, for markets, for people. It does not look like a product. It may have products involved, but these products are connecting to a network. And the whole point of service design is to look at networks. In the past, the product was some kind of a barrier between the company and the market. The company would spend a lot of time designing the product, and there would be very little interaction with the market until the moment of launch of the product. After the launch of the product, then the market started using the product in so many different ways, and in which the company are not aware of. And then there's this kind of a gap between what the company knows and what the market knows about the product. This is the industrial, somehow, production of industrial design, traditional industrial design. And this is more like the new emergent service design approach, in which you try really to connect marketing with company at the point that the company is the market and the market is the company. It's very difficult to, for example, distinguish what is the market of apps and what is the products of Apple. It's really ingrained, it's really intertwined. Service design focuses on creating value at the boundaries, not at the core of organizations. If in the past the company would spend a lot of time, even years, on creating value, a valuable product inside the company, and then the company would think, okay, I have this valuable product, I will put it in the market, let's see if I can sell it for a good price. Now, here, the value is not created inside the company, but in fact, in all these relationships that are created in the market, with the interaction with the people over there. Let's look at a model, a more specific model about this. You have a producer, it can be a service delivery company, it could be also a manufacturer. It's not a problem. You can still think about service designing, co-creating value at the boundaries, for example, legal. Lego is one of the biggest players in co-creation. It did not create one toy, but a toy that can be as many toys as people would like. So the kids are co-creators of their toys, right? And also, Lego realized that it could create websites, movies, all kinds of media that helps people to co-create their own stories. This is very different from traditional toy companies that try to create value and then exchange that value for something else with a client that has no direct contact or interaction with the company, with the producer. So value co-creation is one of the most important concepts of service design. And these are examples of practical examples of currently how value co-creation concept is applied to services. Companies, whatever. Crowdsourcing, when you ask a lot of people to give ideas to innovate in the company. For example, you open, you have this Renault experience. Challenge now that Hotmilk and Puk is helping to organize. This is crowdsourcing. You crowdsource innovation of Renault, and then some ideas will be taken over by Renault. But the crowd is doing that, all these students around Brazil. Mass customization is also co-creating value in the boundary. Peer-to-peer network, like sharing music, sharing stuff that people do sometimes even illegally. Shared resources, Uber or Airbnb, they share resources that are not owned by the company but owned by the client. Open innovation, it's also the Renault experience example. Usually, typically, open innovation involves triple helix relationships, university, companies, and government together. Joint ideation, it's a lot of what we do here in classes. Co-creating things with post-its and other creative materials. Experience centers, I'm not so sure what this means, but I would say it's like places that you go to feel experience more than buy a product, consume something, for example Disneyland. Products as service, instead of selling a washing machine, instead of selling a water filter, Brastemp is now selling a service of maintaining the filter and that it can come and clean regularly. I'm not sure if they still have this service, but in the past it was announced as a big innovation. You do not own, as a consumer, you do not own the water filter. You just have the service of clean water. So implementing these crazy ideas is very difficult because people don't want to change while technology is not available. So there are two different things here that I'm talking about. People are very resistant in service organizations or in the industry. And they think they are very suspicious that if this would ever work, doing things so differently. And on the other hand, in Brazil we also suffer from a lack of technology that can help delivering services with such innovations. Well, Nelson Mandela said once, it always seems impossible until it is done. And after it's done, we have a different idea what's possible, right? He stayed in prison for 3 years, dreaming with a new South Africa, and that apartheid would be over. And people that would live at that time with apartheid would think that it's impossible to overcome apartheid. It's going to be forever, this racism, this official racism. But Nelson Mandela dreamed of that, and then after he got out of the prison, he ran for the elections, and he was elected. And then apartheid started to fade out. It's still it's ingrained in South Africa culture, but I'm sure that people there believe that it can improve with generations. So possibilities change. The aim of service design, hence, is to create possibilities for other activities. So these activities, they would believe it's possible. So maybe this is the best contribution design can do for society at all. At large, I would say. Where possibilities come from in design? Well, you have seen already this diagram. And new possibilities come once you are searching for radical alternatives or with broad explorations. You're really trying to think about in the different ways on what's possible and what's not possible. I also call this expansion of the space of possibilities by creating new possibilities. And also I talk about the box, right? So thinking outside of the box, the main consequence is actually the box enlarges, becomes bigger if you really convince people that it's possible to do what's outside of the box. So in a nutshell, how to create new possibilities and identify what is considered to be possible and also what's considered to be impossible. Then you search for new possibilities outside of the space of possibilities. What does it mean? It means that you are exploring things that people never thought about doing. And that maybe it's your best contribution to this activity. You may also confront the impossible with the possible. Look, if this is possible, you know that this is possible, but this is also possible. If you think this is impossible, I can show you it is possible. So this is the way how you create new possibilities. You help realize people that it is possible, but you do not do by yourself, right? You have to engage other people into thinking it's possible, otherwise people will not really do their part in changing those activities. This is the task I asked you to do along the week. I hope that you have done it. Have you done this?
I did one it wasn't that. I think I did one that was...
Oh, okay, from 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, then you may do this today and then validate later. It's no problem. But basically, what you're going to do is thinking inside the box. You draw a box and then you write down what do you think it's possible to change in this activity. Or better, what people in this activity are thinking it's possible to change in the activity. And what you know that people think it's impossible to change in the activity. We're going to do this after these slides.
What we know, is
what you know already, but you have to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. So what this is to map, what are the conceptions of people have about what's possible and what's impossible. Not your own opinion. Okay? I have a lot of tools that I developed during my PhD in Holland to simulate and expand, to check what are the possibilities, what is the possible and what is impossible, and to confront people with the impossible and the possible, and devise, helping them to devise new possibilities. This is a board game called HEAD that helps nurses, technicians, doctors to realize what is possible to do in a new hospital that they are about to start using. So they created a new hospital, built a new hospital in the city of Enschede in Holland, and now people have to adapt their activities to this new hospital. And instead of waiting to actually enter the building, we anticipated the building using a game. And most people were initially negative about this new building. This has been badly designed, it's not going to work. But with this game, they realized new possibilities that the building offered to them that they never thought about. Also, I use board games to simulate, to create scenarios. Like, for example, these guys said, all right, if I come to this place with some materials to work on, I will need storage here, very close to me, otherwise I cannot switch between the materials. And the architect that designed this plan, this is a floor plan for a new building, he didn't think about storage, but playing out this scenario brought this new requirement. In Clinics Hospital of Paraná, I also used some of my tools to check what's possible, what's impossible. We created Cartesian map with four quadrants here. There are two variables. If in the future the number of patients increases or decreases, and in the vertical axis is like the ratio of canceled operations. This is a high ratio, this is low ratio. This is, then we have four scenarios. This scenario is low, high ratio of cancellations, and here is a low number of patients. This is impossible, I think. If you have a high cancellation, mostly it's because you have a lot of patients. And this is currently the situation in this hospital. It's high cancellation rate and also a high number of patients waiting to be operated. This is the situation of public health in Brazil, and it's getting worse. Especially after this PEC 241. it's strange. But okay, we try to realize what we have to do with those different scenarios. If things get better, at least they know what they can do. And we also use a lot of theater repressed, image theater. We used already here in this class, in a previous lecture. We're going to use maybe in the next lecture, I don't know yet. But this is all possibilities of reacting to the oppression. They are documented in a flow chart. I published a paper about this relationship between possibilities in design through games, and I claim that games help people to realize possibilities of space and bring those possibilities of space into the space of possibilities. So what was once considered impossible or even not considered at all, nobody saw that this was something they could do. By playing the game, they bring this into the considered possibilities of doing things, the space of possibilities. So the whole thing, in a very simple language, is design is all about seeing objects as they could be, not as they are. This is very different from engineering, I would say. Because most of that, not engineering, but actually science, sorry. Science is more like, let's define what is the object, and let's be very exact on this object, right? Then let's talk about what we know for sure. And it's very closed system. Design, and I think also engineering, but engineering has a stronger relationship with science that somehow, I would say, makes engineering slower in this regard. Or consider radical alternatives, for example. Because engineers say, no, that's impossible. They are the first ones to say, it's impossible, we cannot do. But designers don't care about this. First, they want to imagine, even if it's impossible. Because if you have something impossible, you may come closer to what is possible. So seeing things as they could be. The designer, he looks at a drawing. Remember the very first exercise, I think, we did to understand what was design. And then we saw how drawing a small circle would be a non-trivial task on telling what is it. It can be many things. It can be an orange, it can be a ball, it can be a traffic light, it can be everything, a wheel. And that's what a designer does. It's always looking at things as they could be, not as they are. Sketching is the way the designers see the object as they could be. It's very different from observational drawing or technical drawing, right? I think you probably have two different courses for those topics, right? Lais, right?
Bruna.
You have different courses for sketching and technical drawing, right?
Yes, a different course.
Yeah, different disciplines.
Uh-huh.
Technical drawing is more like you have to draw something very precise way. Mm-hmm. But sketching is more like how do you use pen and paper to create things in many different ways, right? However, many people cannot sketch, cannot draw properly. And then you need all these co-creation materials that are bringing those boxes and cartwheels. Expansive design is an approach that tries to expand the possibilities for the design object. And this is an example I already showed to you. The cell phone, or smartphone actually became multifunctional instrument that can deal with a lot of different objects. This is very expansive and also very confusing. But expansive design typically produces confusing things. It's normal. Reductive design reduces the possibilities for the design object and makes more optimized instruments for single objects. So here you have a very simple object that only talks about weather, and then it shows the umbrella shows in the colors and LED colors what is the weather prediction. That's all it does. It doesn't do anything else. This is reductive design. So these two styles of design, expansive design and reductive design, is the main theme topic of my PhD thesis, but I'm not going to explain in details now. If you want to know, you just get and read the stuff, the thesis itself. Alright, so what is object expansion? You already have seen this topic a lot in this course. But I just want to remind you that to have a new object, everything changes in the activity. And the old object will still coexist for some time and will create some contradictions. You have identified those contradictions already in the activity you are studying. But I want to introduce a new concept, the shared object concept. If you have two different activities, and sometimes these activities provide something that this activity would like to have a say on it, would like to construct together. For example, in the past, students who come to the school only to study, right? But the teachers, they would come to the school to teach. And studying and teaching sometimes did not match in the same topic, because what the student wanted to learn was not what the teacher wanted to teach. What does it mean they create a shared object? The curriculum is co-created. So it's all about the interest of the students and also the teacher together constructing collaboratively what is the curriculum of what is the syllabus of the course. And that will be a shared object, the curriculum. If you have changes in one activity, in the relationship between one activity and other activities, then you start to have a kind of a ripple effect mechanism, and then all the activities in the network start to change. You have seen in the past that one activity connects to the other. This activity, for example, produces rules for this activity, and this activity produces objects for this activity. And this activity produces something else for another activity. And then after, for example, at some point, this activity starts to provide subjects for this activity. For example, if these guys start to participate in this activity, then you change this activity and everything else. This is the network thinking that is core of service design. Service design, everything's about one tool, one activity. It's all about multiple. That's why it's so complex, and also, but also why service designers typically have a higher paid salary than product designers and graphic designers. Service design innovation. So what? How do you get innovation in this scenario of multiplicities? Services, as I said before, are activities, not technologies. Once service innovation means that the whole activity changes, and also add activities around it. Well, actually, it's the last topic here. Service innovation spread through other services, creating a reconfiguration of the network. And the trigger for service design innovation is typically co-creation at the boundaries through shared objects. So creating these shared objects is typically the beginning of innovation. All right. So, now we have two exercises to do. You have paper with you? No? I'll have to pick it up. But you are very familiar with this model. You just have to start drawing this model with the new services that you have in mind. This service will share an object with this with the thing that you have studied, right? It will co-create an object. For example, do you remember what were the objects of your activity you were studying? Mm-hmm. Imagine that that is a new company, and this new company helps to transform that object. That's your service that you're going to design, all right? It can also be a new department inside your organization. Do you get it?
I think so.
All right.